Welcome to Bookish Podcast with Kath and Al, a podcast about books-ish. A quick disclaimer before we start, there may be some spoilers, so please save the episode for later if you don't want any. And also, please follow us on social at We Are Bookish Pod. We hope you enjoy.
Allô, ça va?
Oui, ça va, et toi?
Ah, bien. Merci. The reason for the French is because the book we're talking about today is set in the south of France.
Yeah, I love France.
Oh, I'm so desperate to go back.
When was the last time you went to France?
It was 2019, I think.
Oh, okay, just before the pandemic.
I think. Yeah, we went to Biarritz.
Lovely.
On a Swedish surfing course.
What?
Where I didn't speak Swedish, but took the waves anyway.
My brain's quite tired and I'm trying to process that bit of information. Sure, okay. Swedish surfing course in France.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. My friend was like, hey, do you want to go surfing? My friend's dropped out. I need someone to take a place. I was like, yeah, sure, let's go. And then she was like, okay, cool, we're going with this company. And I was like, the website is all in Swedish. You should know that she is actually Swedish.
I can't
put that much. For the viewers out there, she is Swedish. And I was like, cool, will they be able to accommodate me, the English-speaking idiot here who doesn't speak Swedish? Like, sorry about it. And she was like, yeah, it was all fine. And then we got there and it was like, oh, yeah, they did tell us about you. We're hoping it was like, you know, there's someone here that will help. There was like a surfer there from like South America.
Oh, well, you don't basically need to speak. You just need to surf. So that's fine.
Yeah. As long as you can, you could just like... just show me what you need to do. Like I know the basics anyway. So they took everyone at different levels, which was fine. So it wasn't really like such a big thing, but it was quite funny.
Huh.
But that was the last time I'd been in France. And then obviously I wanted to go for my 30th. I wanted to do champagne and champagne.
Oh, I wanted you to do champagne because I was invited.
We're going to Champagne, darling. We're going to do champagne and champagne.
We are. Maybe we should go for my 30th instead.
when was the last time you went to France?
2019 sometime. I go quite a lot because I lived there for a bit. So I go and see my pals sometimes, practice my French. For those of you that don't know, I have a degree in French. Woo! I can't remember exactly when, but I do miss it a lot. I was meant to go for 2 weeks in summer of 2020, and then obviously it got pushed to 2021, and now it's 2022. Classique. So yeah, but yeah,
it's gonna be a lot of that, isn't there?
Yeah, literally. Yeah, what have you been up to this week?
Okay, so I was off. We said our book is that we're going to talk about is set in France, and I wanted, and it's a thriller, so I wanted to recommend a thriller to everyone to watch because I had the week off last week and I did nothing but watch Love Island and other random bits of television. So I want to recommend a thriller before I go on my Love Island rant. And that is, for anyone in the UK, it's called Cruel Summer. It's on Amazon Prime. It's great. Really great storytelling. I think they released it in the States back in the spring, but it's only come this side of the ocean, literally in August. It's called Cruel Summer, like I said. It's on Amazon Prime. It's a thriller about two girls that live in this fictional town of Skyland, Texas. And one is like really popular, the other one isn't. The really popular girl goes missing. The other girl sort of like takes her place, sort of steps into her life, as it were. And it sort of documents what happens when this girl comes back when she is found after she's gone missing. And it's fantastic. They tell the story sort of like out of order across the years of 93, 94 and 95. What's really great about it is that visually, the storytelling, like 93, it's all bright and summery before anything happens. 94 is like when the girl reappears, and then 95 is like the this like lawsuit that's happening between the two girls, and it's just honestly fantastic. The characters are unlikable, they're unreliable in terms of like their narrative. You can never really trust anyone, but you can never really trust anyone, and you can never really get behind them, but you still have an empathy for them, for the characters, especially like there's a character called Mallory who I did not like. But there is something about her that you don't completely like go, okay, well, I don't not feel empathy or sympathy for you, if you know what I mean. Mm. And the wardrobe is fantastic. The music is fantastic. There's a twist at the end, which is, if you've been paying attention, even if you have or haven't been paying attention, it's really quite great.
Did you guess it? Because you always guess the twist.
No, not this time.
That means it's a good twist, guys, because Ellie guesses many things.
Many twists. It's a really simple one where, when you think about it, it's actually very obvious.
Sometimes all the clues best, though. I feel like it doesn't need to be complicated.
Oh yeah, it's really not. All the clues are there in the characters and how they portray themselves. I think I sort of like didn't do the guessing game this time. I just sort of let myself.
You let yourself enjoy it. Good.
Enjoy it. So it was great. And there's a season two, but I really hope that the season two isn't based on these characters, because I think they've wrapped up nicely. I don't think there's anything more you can do with them. So yes, I highly recommend Cruel Summer as a thriller to watch on Amazon Prime.
Yes. Good stuff.
Yeah. How about you?
I've just been like trying to write this essay. I'm writing an essay on social media and for a competition, and like my brain's just like, I finally got like, I've got 800 words of like waffle. I'm getting there. That's what I've been up to. But I feel like I've used all my brain power now. And like, I was meant to write a blog for the podcast and I didn't, so.
It's okay.
But you know, writing is like, it does make me happy. So I'm not complaining. I'm enjoying it.
You know what you should do to switch off, Kath?
What?
You should dip back into Love Island for this final week.
Yeah, do you know what? I spoke to my mum earlier and she was like, I'm just catching up on Love Island. And I was like, Mum, I'm not even watching Love Island anymore.
Not gonna lie though, that whole stuff with Faye that happened like two weeks ago really did.
I switched off after that.
Yeah, it had a knock on effect, I think. It did sort of tinge the season in not such a great way.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people, Faye hasn't really made that full recovery. The producers apologized. That didn't come from her, that came from the producers. They were like, you need to apologize.
How do you know that? Is that like,
it was reported,
really?
Yeah,
I mean, maybe I will actually. It's quite a good thing to switch off to, and by the time you finish recording, it'll be like just time. And actually, I do really need something to switch off because my brain's been like very active. So maybe I will.
Yeah. Well, by the time anyone listens to this, I think it will be done, right? I think it's due to finish on the 23rd or something. But it's a shouty episode, I have to say, because they did this thing where they made the couples vote for who was the most compatible. And four of them were up for the chopping block. So it was Liberty and Jake, Priya and Brett, Mary and Aaron, and Faye and Teddy. And Faye's been playing detective.
Has someone sent them home?
They sent Priya and Brett home yesterday. So then the public got to vote for once to kick somebody off, which was Priya and Brett, because Priya got the ick, and basically she's just the worst. She's a snob. She's boring. And, well, you know, she fancies Boris Johnson, so enough said.
I haven't watched any episodes with her in, so I can't formulate an opinion, because the only thing I know about her is that she fancies Boris Johnson. And I don't think that's enough to formulate an opinion on someone, because it would only be negative if I formed it on that.
No. Okay, I tell you this. She's a snob. She had the audacity to call Brett boring, and maybe he is boring, but she's also very boring. And she's got this air of, she's got major Tory energy. Sorry.
Oh, no.
Sorry for any Tory listeners out there, but like, yeah, she
I feel like we're, yeah, anyway.
I think she thinks that she's, yeah, I don't know. It's just something
so she's
about
not,
her energy.
Not a favourable contestant then.
No. And it was really boring watching them. They kept putting them on the screen. I was like, for goodness sake. But what she did do before she left, which I absolutely love, was she hit that chaos button before she left, and she told Faye that she didn't vote for her. And because they told them how many votes each couple got, Faye was able to deduct, like, work out. So I was there for that. But the thing
That's
for me
jokes.
Was that she was basically like, oh, look, she was telling everyone that she got the ick from this guy. And then the boys had to sit him down and go, she's been bitching about you, which was really horrible. Because then he was like, dude, like, he had to sit her down and be like, look, that's not cool for me to hear it from everyone else. And he's going around going, yeah, I had a really great date. It was so embarrassing.
Oh, bless.
Yeah. But
I mean, I guess that's just Love Island though, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Unfortunately, that's part of it.
But yeah, so I want Chloe and Toby to win. I'm going to say that. I'm Chloe and Toby. He's had great character development. He's had a great story. Both of them have had a great story arc. Yeah, they really have, haven't they?
She wasn't very preferable to start off with. And now, the thing is, I do think the producers need to learn from this season, because
yes.
It needs to be less there needs to be less toxic drama. That's the thing. Like, we want drama, but we don't want people to be, like, mentally, like, affected by the drama. Do you know what I
mean?
Like, there is definitely a happy medium to be had. Sorry, I'm just shutting my window because my neighbour's dog has just started barking. I don't want to subject you all to it. Like, I love a cute dog as much as the next person, but this dog is Satan.
That yappy dog that you were talking about before.
Oh, my God, I can't. I actually can't with it. It, like, I call it an it because I don't even know. I've never seen it. So I can't tell you anything about the dog. I don't even know what kind of dog it is. I just hear it. It's like, it haunts me. So anyway, it's very haunting. Like this thriller.
Like this thriller we're going to talk about, which is by Kate Riordan. It's called The Heat Wave. It was basically a really big Instagram book like last year for 2020.
Yeah, it really was, wasn't it?
Really was. And we both picked it up. I was hoping for it to be a trashy sort of thriller, but it wasn't. It's also a Richard and Judy book club pick.
Yeah, which is maybe why it was so prevalent on social, potentially.
Yeah,
sometimes that happens.
I've read a few Richard and Judy book club picks. The last couple, because you were reeling off a list, and I was like, oh, okay, I've read some of them, not so bad. But there was one that I remember them recommending. It was like the first one I ever picked. It was called Bleed For Me by Michael Robotham, which is also like another thriller. And I really didn't like it. So like my first introduction into Richard and Judy's book club, I was so disappointed.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah.
Well, how about you? Have you ever picked up a book from like a book club like Richard and Judy and was either excited or disappointed by it?
Well, when you mentioned that, I went on their website and I've read quite a few. So obviously The Heat Wave, Expectation by Anna Hope, which I would recommend actually. The Beekeeper of Aleppo, one of the best books I read last year. So it's all right. Half a World Away, we did an episode on that, you know. The Silent Patient, questionable. Where the Crawdads Sing, our last episode. Blood Orange, also love that book. And then, oh, My Sister the Serial Killer as well, also a great book. But then there's The Family Upstairs by Lisa Jewell. And my word, is that book something else. Like, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed reading that book. Right, it was summer. I was sat in my parents' garden. I had my legs out. You know, soaking up the heat, reading the book as if I was on holiday, even though we were in lockdown. And, you know, I quite enjoyed it, but I sat there the whole time and I was like, what on earth is happening in this book? And we did it for book club, didn't we? And
yeah.
Like, we were all just like, what the hell? Like, I couldn't really tell you what happens. I don't understand the twist. I don't understand the characters. Like,
The thing is, it's received so well. But, okay, I have to say, to be fair, our book club, very bad, terrible at... we're unforgiving, I would say. So we can tear something completely apart. But I think everyone was on the... We didn't understand why they were... Who was upstairs?
Well, yeah, exactly. Why is it called the family up... I mean, honestly, though, would say that I didn't not... Like, when I was reading it, I didn't not enjoy myself. And I finished the book quite quickly.
Yeah.
But, at book club and, like, taking my thoughts to book club, I was like, I don't really get this book. And I don't really understand why it's so popular.
Like, I just thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, like that was quite a funny book club.
To me,
we were all just a bit like, what the hell?
To me, it was a comedy. I've had a comedy. A comedy thriller. Because it was serious.
Lisa Jules, like, really, hold on, I'm Googling her right now, because I'm sure I might have read some of her other books.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're quite good. So Lisa Jules. Books.
Because another member of the book club had recommended the book and she is a big fan, so she was a little bit disappointed, I think, by it, because she's read other titles by Lisa Jewell.
Okay, so I haven't read other titles, but the other book I was thinking of is The Third Wife. Oh my god, no way, Ellie, there's a family upstairs too coming in 2022.
No, okay, you have to read it. The revenge.
Oh, my god. Guys, you have no idea what this means to us.
This is
I'm gonna
exciting.
Text Catherine right now. I'm gonna and give, like, read her reply on the podcast. She can
WhatsApp live.
Oh my god, this is, I don't think you guys realize the significance of this. Catherine is gonna scream.
Oh my god,
I've just sent her a picture and we'll
get her
we'll
to revisit send a voice note back. Oh, wait. Oh, you've sent it to the group chat.
Okay.
So she that has to be one of the books.
That's hilarious. I'm really glad that you guys got a live reaction to that, because, wow.
It's gripped audiences around the world, becoming a smash hit with readers. Why? Why? Because it's so hilarious.
Oh,
do you
my
think
word.
He goes? Do you think he? Sorry, this won't mean anything out of context anyway. Do you think he'll go to South Africa and find that guy?
Oh my god, she's replied. She just replied with, like, a shocked face. I don't know. Maybe this is the thing. Like, surely it's going to be set in South Africa. We need to not give too much away, just in case anyone wants to read the family
she's upstairs. Typing.
This is brilliant. This is absolutely great. We'll get to our book in a sec.
she's typing, guys. Live reactions here on Bookish Podcast.
Book club pick for August 2022 is sorted.
It actually is the perfect summer read.
Our friend Catherine said she was going to write a sequel, like, as a joke. So I've just replied to her saying, did you write it?
Because she's due to write a few sequels for us for books that we've read.
Yeah. The Watchmaker of Filigree. I'm surprised that's not a Richard and Judy book club pick. It follows the same kind of realm of bizarreness. Oh, God. Anyway, let's talk about the heatwave, shall we?
Yes, let's talk about the heatwave.
Let's get straight into it, 20 minutes into the episode.
This is definitely a summer pick, for sure. And we have the blurb here, so we'll read it to you. Elodie was beautiful, Elodie was smart, Elodie was troubled, Elodie is dead. In Provence, under a sweltering sun, Sylvie returns to the crumbling family home of La Rêverie with her youngest daughter, Emma. yet every corner of the house is haunted by memories of Elodie, her first child, memories she has tried to forget, but whose long-ago death the villagers certainly haven't. As temperatures rise and forest fires rage through the French countryside, memories of Elodie spread further through Sylvie's mind, because there's something Sylvie's been hiding about what happened to Elodie all those summers ago, and it could change everything.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay, my first thought as you read that so beautifully to me.
Oh.
The fires are kind of irrelevant to the whole book.
When do they happen?
Oh, wait, no, there is a fire, isn't there?
There's forest fires,
and then there's a fire in the barn, and it's just unnecessary to have the forest fires. Like, I know they're probably kind of trying to do all that, like, oh, the fire, like, there's fire everywhere, but, like, I just don't really get it.
I don't know if that was because, you know, when they so basically this is told, like, in flashbacks as well. There's, you've got the present day narrative, and then you've got the flashbacks to like 93 to fill in sort of what this the relationship is with Sylvie and her eldest daughter. And I feel like they talk about it being a place where they're, I don't know if it's because I read Malibu Rising at the same time, so I'm confusing the forest fires. I feel like forest fires are a thing that
No, they are a thing in this book.
Right, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I don't know if maybe they're playing on her paranoia or I don't know.
I don't remember now. Yeah, because there's that whole thing about her remembering the fire because she tries to set her child, her little sister on fire, doesn't she?
Oh, my God.
I mean,
why is it with children being... children. I'm saying this like this is a thing. It's not. but like, what's it called? Pyro...
Oh, pyromania?
Pyromaniacs, yes.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's a curiosity thing. Like, ooh, fire. Actually, the other day I had, like, did, like, a fire pit thing. Mm. You know, like, an outdoor fire pit. And you, like, toast marshmallows on it. It's all fun. And yeah. I was just, like just sitting there watching the flames for ages. And I was like, this is really relaxing, just watching the flames. But obviously... a very controlled environment and I didn't feel threatened by it. But like flames are quite relaxing to watch, but not when it's like your house is on fire, obviously, so you know.
Mm-hmm. And there was something about the she tried to set her daughter, the younger sister, on fire, right? And is that like one of those hidden memories or one of those internalized traumas that Emma might have had that she didn't realise what it was?
Maybe, yeah.
Because it happens in the barn, doesn't it? That's what happens in the barn.
Yeah.
So, I wasn't sure.
Yeah. Sorry, I've just got my top caught on my watch and I'm like stuck with my hand tied to my top because I can't... What's happening?
How did you do that?
I don't know. I've managed to cut it off. We're all good. We're free. We're ready to talk about the book again. I feel like it was meant to be like she's gonna remember being set on fire in the barn because of the forest fires kind of thing, you know?
Who, Emma?
Yeah.
Yeah. So to sort of set the scene to where we begin at the book, Sylvie goes back to France because there's been some fires in the area, specifically around a barn at Le Reverie, their old family home, which hasn't been lived in for like 10 or so years. So she goes back. She doesn't want to take her youngest daughter, Emma, but her husband's a bit shit and can't take her. So that's a common theme throughout the book, is shit. He's a shit husband. Her ex-husband, I should say. So he can't take Emma. He's busy with his new family, his new wife, his work. And so she goes back with Emma to this house. And so that's where it sets the scene. And she's not ever really told Emma what the go is. All that anyone knows is that Elodie is dead, right? She doesn't really... And she died from, like, what was it? Just an assumed illness. But it's never really spoken about. But going
back
there... Yeah,
it's kind of very... Yeah.
Yeah. Going back there sets Sylvie, like, on edge, basically, because the house is really creepy. Things happen. She thinks she sees people. She's not quite sure of what it is that she sees, when she thinks she's seen people. So there's a lot of that going on. And in that happening present day, we get this sort of ongoing backstory in 1993 of her and her eldest daughter that sort of leads to a crescendo at the end.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see the sort of relationship dynamics that Elodie has with, not Elodie, Sylvie, the mother, has with her eldest daughter, Elodie, and then her youngest daughter, Emma. Would you say?
Yeah, I think, yeah. So, like, to caveat, I don't know if you guys can tell, didn't love this book, and Ellie really did. But I do appreciate, I feel like I appreciate some of the themes and I feel like it had potential, but it just didn't live up to that for me. And like, I think the exploring the relationships just needed, like, it was a bit more nuanced than she gave room for, in my opinion. So like, for example, like the mental health talk, I feel like it's a bit more complicated and a bit more nuanced than was explored in the book. But so then what, I also...
What aspects of mental health are...
So, like, obviously the kid is, like, not okay. And she gets, like, taken to, like, a psychiatrist. And, like, I don't know. I feel like it's not really, like... I guess because it's meant to be like a summer trashy novel, then like it's not really like meant to be exploring that theme. But then I just feel like it doesn't really hit the nail on the head for me personally.
So what Kath means by the kid is Elodie. So...
Sorry. Thanks, Ellie.
So what we learn about their relationship, or at least Sylvie and Elodie's relationship in the past, is that they never really, they don't bond. It's almost instant for Sylvie,
yeah,
when Elodie is born, that there's no, that all of us, Elodie just doesn't like Sylvie. She like feels that from when she's born, which is such a like a real like position to take on a baby that can't speak or speak for itself, defend itself. She's just like, this baby doesn't like me, and she just feels it quite... from as soon as she's born.
I think it's quite sad, and I think like it does happen, like when people, like mothers sometimes don't bond with their children in the way that they might expect to, like straight away. Like this girl, what's her name? Libby Page. She wrote the Lido, or Lido, however you say that. She was talking about, she's just had a baby, and she was talking about like her struggling to like bond with her baby and stuff, like really, really openly on Twitter, which was really interesting. So I guess like, that's like a real thing that happens sometimes, and like I felt quite sorry for Sylvie. I mean, because like she obviously was really excited to have this baby, and then like it wasn't what she expected from it.
Yeah, and we get we learn like of several instances where. So I think so. Kate Riordan, who's the author, she says that this book was inspired by like narratives of like. The book, you know, think books like We Need to Talk About Kevin. And also she references other like things, we'll get to that. But this idea that as we learn in the past of Sylvie and Elodie's relationship, that it's more than just them not connecting or bonding from birth. Elodie exhibits sort of worrying, concerning behavior. She shows no empathy. She's a bit of a sociopath. She knows how to manipulate.
Is it a sociopath or a psychopath?
We can look it up.
Shall I Google it?
I don't know if she's
She's a psychopath.
Is she? No, I don't know.
She's referred to as a psychopath in the book.
She's a psychopath.
Psychopath versus sociopath. Ooh, versus narcissist. Bloody hell.
She's a narcissist, maybe.
Psychopaths tend to be more manipulative, can be seen by others as more charming, lead a semblance of a normal life and minimize risk in criminal activities. Sociopaths tend to be more erratic, rage prone, and unable to lead as much of a normal life.
She is definitely probably more of a psychopath then. She's very manipulative. She has a work around men. She has a natural affinity to men. Like her relationship with her dad is fine. He tends to overlook a lot of her behavior and just set it down to, well, Sylvie, you're being irrational, or Sylvie, you're doing, Sylvie, you're being ridiculous kind of thing. And he lets Elodie get away with a lot. But it's not every, not everyone is fooled by Elodie. A lot of the townspeople can see her behaviour.
Yeah.
Maybe she is a sociopath because she terrorises the children, and the children aren't,
Yeah, that's true.
She's not, they're not like stupid to it. They're very, they are very wary of her.
There are
a lot of
yeah.
everyone is. I think there's only a few people she actually fools, her dad being one of them.
Yeah, but like, so her relationship with her dad is explored. And then there's like, to be honest, okay, one of the issues I had with this book is that there are loads of random characters introduced. So there's loads of random men in the book that just aren't fully like developed.
Which ones?
I don't even know their names, to be honest, at this point. And I can't flick through the book because I read it on my Kindle. And to be honest, guys, I do wonder if that's slightly why I didn't enjoy it that much, because I don't really like reading on a Kindle, but I was, it was near payday, as in before payday, and we were reading it for book club, and it was 99p on Kindle, so it was a no-brainer for me at that point. So I wonder if that didn't really help. But yeah, like, there's lots of random men introduced, and like, I don't feel like, like, there's Sylvie's love interest, which is fine, and then there's Sylvie's old love interest, she kissed that random bloke. And then there's like the random pool kid. Like, it's just loads of random blokes in the book. And
I just think they, in my head, I was like, oh, they're just tools for Elodie to manipulate. Like, it's like her one upping her mum all the time, where her mum feels like she's got solace in people. She's just like, nah, I can kiss your man.
Oh god.
Oh, I don't know. So she does things, she tortures kids basically. It's really quite cruel. It's really quite, it made me feel uncomfortable reading. Yeah. I know that you didn't. Or was it Caroline who said that?
No, I did find it uncomfortable to read. Yeah, no, I did. I did read it quite fast as well. Like, I wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, oh my god, this book's such a slog to get through. But just when I finished it, I was just like, I really wanted more from that.
Yeah, because it draws an interesting point, right, about children being, like, the capability of a child being evil at such, if that makes sense. Because she references the Jamie Bulger case, which is a really horrific murder of a young boy back in 93. And he was, you know, lured away from his mother while they were out shopping and taken by two young boys. At the time, I think they were both 10, and they took him to a railway line and they tortured him. And it's like one of the most prolific, horrific child murders, like anything to happen in the UK. And she does reference it in the book. She does reference it, and there's this idea of, can it, like, is it nurture or nurture? How much of Sylvie is responsible for Elodie maybe being this way? How much of it is Elodie just being born this way? And I was saying to you, Kath, earlier that there's a storyline on Coronation Street, which is a soap opera in the UK, the longest running soap opera I think in the world. And
are you a fan, Ellie?
I love Coronation Street. It's really good. Like, it's the only soap I will watch. I stopped watching EastEnders like years ago. But there's this storyline with a child called Hope Stape. She is 10. And the reason I talked about children being pyromaniacs earlier is because she is one. She is the child, the offspring of Fizz and John Stape. And John was like a villain. And she now very much has a lot of those qualities. And she basically set a cot on fire. And as a result, her stepdad's partner lost his baby, or lost their baby. And she doesn't care. She has no empathy for it. And there's lots of patterns of that in this storyline with this child throughout. So it's like a really interesting topic to explore, because it does set up that question in terms of, like, how do you deal with a child like that when you're the parent? How do you feel? Do you punish? Because the stuff with Jamie Bulger as well, with James Bulger, was like, okay, it opened up a discussion about when someone is so evil and does such horrific things, like, how do you punish them? Because no one expected 2-10-year-olds to be capable of such evil. And so I think you're right in a sense that this doesn't execute it as such.
Yeah.
Well enough.
I think, yeah, and also, like, it is a good, like, thriller base, because it's, like, so harrowing, and you don't expect a child to be capable of that, because you expect it to be, like, based on their environment. Like, because in the book, it suggests that Elodie had, like, a nice childhood. So it's, like, yeah. I do think it's a very interesting topic, and I just think, because I know you really, like, because you really liked it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
I think a lot of people did, because it's, like, got quite good ratings, but, yeah.
What about the relationship with Elodie and Emma? So, eventually, where did we get to with the plot? So, Sylvie is, like, I guess, Sylvie's sister, by the way, who is the best character in this book.
Yeah, she's Miles. Great.
She's
she
great.
Be in a bit more. The book's she
should have been. She literally came in, was like, I'm here for a week. You know what? It's really fucking creepy here. I'm out.
Yeah, I've got what I need to do. She was like, nah, I'm not. And then she's like to her sister, like, I can't bother with this. This is your issue. Sorry.
Just get your shit and go. Like, oh, because basically they're back in France. She went back to France, but they were just going to sell the house. So she's like, yeah, see ya. But she's by far the best character, and she tells Sylvie all the time, you need to tell Emma the truth, which is a big thing, because Sylvie, the story is written as a letter to Emma, I guess, which I think is probably for me like the way she's telling her the truth. But you do see that breakdown in their relationship, Sylvie and Emma, with her sort of holding back the truth a lot. What did you think of their relationship?
Who? Emma and Elodie? Sylvie. Emma and Sylvie. I think she was just, like, very overprotective, and I feel like Emma was, like, starting to show signs of, like, resisting that. But I don't, again, I feel like it wasn't explored well enough. Like, she was sort of starting to pull away, but not quite. And I feel like that could have been more dramatic and more, like, over the top. Mm-hmm. Because if your mum, like, she's at that age where her mum's, like, a bit too much for her.
Yeah.
You know? Like, just, like, being a teenager and being like, I want to be independent.
Yeah.
And I found her age quite hard to grasp. Like, I kept forgetting how old she was.
She's 13.
Yeah, I didn't feel like, I don't know.
It wasn't really clear, I don't think.
No. The other thing that I didn't really get, right, is why she was writing to Emma the whole way through the book. Like, I feel like obviously that was just, like, the vehicle for her to tell the story.
Yeah.
But it just didn't really make sense. Like, I feel like she could have just written it. Like, I didn't really feel like that neat, because she kept referring to Emma, like, you, blah, blah, blah. And, like, I understand why, because she was, like, telling the story, but I just feel like that was a bit weak, personally.
fair enough. In my head, I'm like, this is the only way she felt like she could actually say what she needed to say, because she really struggles to tell her the truth. So to sort of just move the plot along, after a dinner date with her lawyer, so the lawyer is helping her to sell the house, Elodie appears, and it's a big surprise to everyone. It's like, oh my god, she's alive. What's she doing back in this house? And they have this sort of, like, strained reunion, right? Like, where it's like, what do we do here? Like, how do we receive each other? Where have you been? Elodie has been in, so to reference the mental health stuff that Kath was talking about before, they put Elodie in, like, was it like a psychiatric ward, home? Place?
Yeah, it's some sort of, like, psychiatric ward, I think. Like, mental health, like, hospital, or, like, some sort of institute or something. And it was very unclear.
I wonder, because mental health is such a big thing now, like, back whenever this was supposed to have been set, and I think, like,
90s, wasn't it?
Yeah. Is that because we're so focused on mental health now that or maybe that we've made such progression, we've come a long way.
Was it maybe a bit of a commentary on the progression we've made, do you think?
I wouldn't give it that much.
Me trying to redeem the book.
Yeah, maybe it was. I don't know.
You're supposed to like this book.
Maybe I'm gonna take that reading. Maybe it's a look at how far we've come from like the 90s to now, where we actually take the time to understand mental health and psychosis that we didn't have in the early 90s and even the early noughties. We've come a long way.
Or maybe it's just not a very good book.
or maybe we're giving her too much credit. Maybe we're filling in some of those plot holes.
But also, I did read, and actually, I think I read this in The Family Upstairs, which, lol, that this was in The Family Upstairs, that great piece of literature. But there was a line in a book I read, and I'm pretty sure it was The Family Upstairs, and it basically was like, there's no such thing as a bad book, because it was published and like someone enjoyed it for it to be published, which means just because it's not your cup of tea doesn't mean it's a bad book. And I really like that. I'm going to find it and I'm going to put it on our Instagram account.
Woo!
If I can find it, because I think I gave away my copy of The Family Upstairs.
I still got mine.
Oh, well, that's fine then. We can find it.
I'll find it. So Elodie coming back exasperates the relationship that Sylvie has with Emma, because Emma is in awe of Elodie. Her big sister is back, and also puts distance between them because Elodie has been shrouded in, mystery for 10 years. So it's definitely interesting. And then you see there's this weird thing that happens with Sylvie where she gets sunstroke, but it's definitely not
sunstroke. What is that about? What is that actually about? And it was like, did she poison her? Like, who knows? That was never explained, probably, but then not really, not enough. And like, why did she only semi poison her? Why didn't she just like properly poison her,
Yeah, Sylvie gets heat stroke, but she's then out for the count really for like a week. And then in that, there's lots of stuff that goes on. Basically, I think Elodie is like having parties and has got her mum like locked away in the house. It's really weird. I went with it. I was like, sure. I was like,
yeah. I mean, also, because it was like diary entries and it went back and forth. Like, I did quite like that because I was quite gripped,
It helps with the pacing. So we learn about their back history. They come back to France to sell the house. Elodie reappears. I feel like they set the barn on fire on purpose to get them to come back, maybe. I felt like that was a trap. Yeah.
That was definitely implied. I think that's right. But then there's a twist at the end.
So there's this party, right?
Well, sorry, a twist. More is of just it, yeah. an extra element.
There's this party, right? Like that. So after the sunstroke incident and this imagining that she's probably been poisoned by her daughter, there's this party that happens at the neighbour's house. The neighbour is, we referenced it earlier, that is an old friend of Sylvie who she had, like, was her childhood sweetheart. They have this, like, thing. I don't know, they have like a chemistry, but it's one of those things that's just never really going to go anywhere. And she ends up with this book. Does Emma go to the party?
Yeah,
Emma goes, Elodie doesn't. Elodie's like, the town doesn't like me, I'm not going. But I feel like it is a trap.
Then she tries to kill our mum.
Yeah, Sylvie, for some reason, decides to go back to the house when she sees it's on fire, which I didn't really understand. I would have just left it, because you don't want the house anyway.
No, she went to save...
What did she go to save?
Elodie.
Oh, she does, doesn't she? Oh, yeah.
And Elodie's just there waiting to kill her.
It's like, weird.
Get you!
She likes... What she does is she, like... Is it... She's, like, face down in the pool or something.
Yeah, she pretends to be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elodie is a brilliant swimmer. That's something you need to know, like, throughout the book. She's always in the pool. She's a brilliant swimmer. So for her to hold her breath, or it is whatever it is that she pretends that she's doing in the pool to bring her, to entice her mother down, is because she's basically a water baby. And then go on, then the twist.
And then, like, oh, it's like so overdramatic at the end that then they find out that, like, Elodie was in some, like, weird, like, retreat place, and then, like, they found a baby and it's her baby, to now, like, the, like, Sylvie's got to, like, look after this child.
Yeah. Elodie, the spawn of Elodie, is she going to be good? Is she going to be evil?
Do you know what? She's really set it up for a sequel.
She has. You won't read it.
Well, it'll be like The Family Upstairs. I'll have to read it by compulsion. Also, it's like I draw the line at the sequel to The Watchmaker of Filigree Street, to be honest.
No,
it's why terrible. Why have all these books got sequels? One was enough.
No, it was like, we do not recommend The Watchmaker. Sorry. Look, you know what you said before, that it's just because it's not our cup of tea does mean that.
Yeah, my brother's girlfriend read it and she really liked it.
God, can she explain why? We'd have to have a separate conversation about
it. Oh, I'm seeing her on Saturday. Shall I ask her?
Yes, please. Get her to, like, put it on a voice note and send it to Kat and I.
Okay. Catherine's featured heavily in this episode. I'd love to
She's
get gonna
her love
on.
It.
Do you
we should have
she'd
Catherine
come on?
Higgin on an episode. Absolutely. She'd come on.
Yeah.
I can't. Yeah, it'll be good.
She's
we'll have
mate.
Her do a bonus ep with her and she can pick the book.
She's brilliant. Guys would love her.
But yeah, so that's basically the premise of the book. I mean, there's lots of little small things that happen in between. Like I said, Sylvie's ex-husband is honestly trash. The worst person. He sort of talks her out of, you know, completing her degree and moving to France. So basically, to makes her do everything that he wants her to do.
Yeah.
He doesn't see the bad. He makes excuses for Elodie, doesn't see the bad in her at all, even if everyone else can see it. He does pop up in the end when Elodie comes back. He comes back to the to La Reverie, but his priorities are all over the place. He's just not he's not the greatest man. He's not who you want in your corner, really. Just generally speaking, outside of the daughters.
Not a team, you know?
Yeah. Like, you should back your girl, make her finish her degree if that's what she wants to do. Like,
back
let her,
your girl. Yeah, that's her, just another element to the book that I was like, girl.
What were the plot? So you said there were a few plot holes. Were there any plot holes that we missed that you wanted to cover?
I feel like I've dragged it enough, like, to be honest. yeah, like, just generally dragged it quite a bit, which I didn't really mean to do. Like, I'm sorry, it just wasn't my cup of tea. I do like a thriller though. If you've got any good thriller recommendations, friends, comment
please.
Send us a DM or something. And also, now I really 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 want to go on holiday and I hate the pandemic.
Yeah,
for many many reasons that are much more important than holidays, but also holidays.
Oh god, it'd be so nice.
Yeah,
just get me on a plane.
You're going though, fingers crossed.
I am going to Spain, guys, in September. I'm really excited. Woo. For a wedding, so it's not just like for the sake of leaving the country, although I'm very happy to get off the island.
Embrace it, honey, you're gonna have such a good time.
I'm so excited.
I'm excited for you. You know what I'm doing though, which is so much better? I'm going camping for one night.
Where?
I don't know. Back I'm garden. Scared. I'm not very good at camping. I'm not very good at the outdoors, to be honest. I like a walk and then I like the inside for sleeping, you know? Away from the bugs and the spiders.
Oh, I like camping.
Yeah, no, it is going to be fun. I am excited. And I did suggest it myself. Like, I haven't been forced into it. I know.
Big
I just want to do something. I've got a week off and I've got nothing to do. So I'm going camping with Tom.
Oh, sweet, sweet
He was really excited because he loves being outdoors and camping. So, and then I was like, maybe we just do like one or two nights. And he's like, why don't you just stick to one to start with?
Well, build your tolerance.
Literally. It's not as exciting as Spain, but still fun.
I'm excited. I'm gonna be hopefully it's gonna be sunny. I'm gonna be by the beach. I'm gonna eat Spanish food. Lots of wine. I'm gonna go see my friend get married. It's gonna be
so good.
Hopefully you meet a hot guy in the airport.
Yes.
Or something.
Definitely manifest that.
Manifest that energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, on that note.
We're going to wrap it up there, but let us know if there's any thrillers that you want us to do.
Yeah. We might do Blood Orange.
We both really liked that.
But I read her second book, The Lies You Told, or something like that, and it wasn't as good, which is a shame.
Thrillers are really hit and miss, I think.
Yeah. They're not really thrillers, but kind of like whodunits.
The
Cara Hunter series. There's five of them now, I think. Four or five. They're really good. If anyone wants like a whodunit kind of vibe. It's set in Oxford and it's based on these like police in Oxford. And like, yeah, it's really great. So I'd recommend that. Actually, Ellie, you should read one of them. You should read the first one. Yeah.
Can you lend it to me?
Yeah, I'll get it when I go home on Saturday.
Merci beaucoup.
It's my parents, so actually I think between us we have all of the books between us, and some of them we have duplicates, but there's a full set of my parents, so I'll get the first one.
Oh my god, you guys are so cute. You have a family collection of books.
Me and my dad literally, like, basically our bookshelves are one, because like if I finish a good book, I'll just give it to him, and he finishes a good book, he'll give it to me.
Did you give your dad Queenie? Was I imagining that?
No, he's got The Vanishing Half.
Ah.
He might have read Queenie, though. I'm not sure. He's got my copy of The Vanishing Half at the moment. He really liked it. Oh, and he read Girl, Woman, Other. That's what you're thinking of, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think he's read Queenie.
I think I was thinking of, because I sent you that Jack Edwards book tube thing yesterday, and I was like, oh, does Kath's dad have Queenie? Don't know.
No, because I read Girl, Woman, Other, and then Queenie in, like, quick succession.
Yeah.
So I think I gave Queenie to you and Girl, Woman, Other to him.
Yeah, I gave you Queenie back though.
Yeah, someone else has got it now.
Hey.
I think it's Catherine. Guys,
lend your books to your mates, because, you know.
You might as well. Need to be read.
Exactly.
Need to be read. I like to get them back eventually, but if it's not a good book, but then if it wasn't a good book, I wouldn't lend it anyway, you know?
Yeah.
I'd throw it away. Well, not throw it away, because you just give it to a charity shop or something.
I'm going to read one of the ones you lent me next, because I need to get these books. I've got to get rid of some books.
I've got some from you as well. So. But anyway, on that note, I'm going to go and rest.
I'm going to go watch Love Island.
For 12 hours, so yay. But productive day.
Productive day. We're doing well. And see you next time, guys.
See you next time.
And that's the app. If you like the episode, please leave us a lovely review, subscribe, and share with your friends. And we'll love you forever. Follow us on socials at We Are Bookish Pod. Thanks for listening.